I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
And it's another happy Memorial Day weekend edition of Upstate Outdoors is on your radio. I'm Philip Gentry along with Tommy Springer.
In the house.
Saluting, first and foremost.
Those who gave it all.
And I know that G.I. Joe and 5-0 will cover this today on Salute to Service, but just remembering all of those lost soldiers and service members and people who have given America its freedom, not to be taken lightly.
Absolutely.
So Bob's at home standing in front of the, not Bob, but just random guy standing at home behind the grill, getting ready to go to the lake. That's all cool. Everybody celebrates in different ways.
True.
Just make sure you know why you celebrate.
Amen.
Awesome. We got a great show for you coming up today. I wrote a piece. We were debating before the show on what I'm allowed to say and what I'm not allowed to say. I lost.
Well.
But I read the Upstate Outdoors blog. I wrote about not being a moron. And I didn't choose that word, but Springer says, well, that's the one Bobby Mack likes, so that's the one we'll go with. Moneypenny said she'd dump me if I said the other word.
Correct.
And, you know, we're only here because Moneypenny allows us to be here.
Correct.
So we got to remember that. It's called Before Hitting the Water, and it's some common sense items about what you need to do if you're headed to the lake, boating season and all that. Yeah. So we'll get into that. Then we're going to have Chris Wood, the president and CEO of Trout Unlimited. For all you folks out there who say, man, why don't y'all cover trout fishing? Then here's one for you.
Bingo.
Because we went to the tippy top of the trout industry, and we got Chris on the show. They're going to have their, what Springer would call their big hoo-ha hoorah.
Board meeting in town
mm-hmm. is going to be in Greenville this year.
Mm-hmm, board of trustees.
If you look at their board of trustees, they ain't none of them from South Carolina. I think there's one from North Carolina in there.
I think so.
So there are a lot of folks coming. And how many trustees they got? About 25?
I believe that's correct, Philip.
Yeah. So they're all coming here, and they're all. There's also another event that they're going to witness tearing down one of the dams up there. So we're looking forward to talking with Chris and getting you all of the information about Trout Unlimited and what they're doing today. Also, speaking of morons, we're going to talk about South Carolina changes in the turkey regulations. And here the morons are the folks who represent us in the upstate because they didn't do squat.
Which is about par for the course of what they've been doing about all year.
Yeah, well, I won't get into that now. I'll get into that later. But if you're an upstate turkey hunter, and you read about the changes in the regulations, if you didn't, we'll cover that for you. But we just got railroaded. Okay?
Pretty much.
I mean, not really, because it went back to the way it was.
Basically.
But it's this is a fine illustration.
Yeah.
That we don't get represented when it comes to game and fish laws. We're an afterthought. The upstate is an afterthought when it comes to game and fish laws.
I would agree with that.
I've always suspected that, sort of felt that, and now here you have it in black and white.
And 5 years of doing this radio show, we've seen it more than once.
Yeah. No, it's the folks down in the lower part of the state that control, and it's, you know, whatever's left over is what we get up here. Mm-hmm. So, not real happy about that. So I'll leave it at that. We'll have some discussion about that. Maybe even take some calls and texts on the Common Sense Retirement Planning text line or whatever we're calling the call.
That's what it is. You did great,
man. What
are
we calling the call-in line?
It's just the regular
call-in line.
No, I'm not seeing anything.
The
Ingles Advantage.
Ingles Advantage talk line?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll any feedback, we'll welcome that. Also, Springer's going to bring us the Roadkill Cafe.
We're having drunk shrimp.
Yeah?
Drunken shrimp.
Drunks are eating shrimp today.
Well, this time of year is just...
Yeah.
I just gravitate toward anything
this
with shrimp.
This time of year, even the shrimp are drunk. Right?
I love them.
Yeah.
I love them, and, you know.
I ate some good shrimp.
And there's a lot of
Thursday.
Them available right now.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just plenty of good shrimp available.
I had some down to Clinton
Bingo.
House Thursday.
There you go.
Some good shrimp. I don't know if they were drunk or not, but they were bold.
Well, if you
bold.
Fix them, like, you see, it's all in how you prepare them, sir.
I see. All right, and.
Wow.
Piers and King Mackerel. Springer's like.
Am I in the ultimate another universe right now?
Yep. We got an article.
Coming live from the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah. Now, this is actually an article that was written in Carolina Sportsman about the pier fishing.
It's hot.
Going on down now around Myrtle Beach in the state line up there. They always, basically both Carolinas. So we'll cover that. Then we're going to talk maybe. To our buddy Sam Jones, because Sam's like, if I got good reception. I cannot imagine that Sam is fishing out in the main lake basin of Lake Joe Cassie today.
I wouldn't think so, but.
He said he's going to be, and he said, but I get pretty good reception down there, so we'll talk with some more trout with Sam Jones.
There you go.
And, man, if he's out there in the main lake basin at 1:30, he'd be ready to pull his hair out. I don't think Sam's got a lot of hair, so that might not be a bad thing.
He's got a nice beard, though.
Got a nice beard, yeah. Got a nice. Maybe he's getting ready to pull his.
His beard hairs out.
Yeah, beard hairs. Then we're going to wrap up our show with a calendar of events and our. Whew, I tell you what, you think you're having a bad day.
I would not want to be this guy.
This guy, and I'll give you two guesses which state he is from. bitten by an alligator, a rattlesnake, struck by lightning, a brown recluse, and all that stuff.
Only thing he's missing is getting bit by a shark.
Yeah, and, that's how they ended up. So, looking forward to the parting shot today.
I don't want to be around that guy.
So, I can already tell you Springer's plans for Memorial Day weekend. He said he's going to put on nothing but a bathing suit and bathe the dogs.
You didn't have to go there, but that's pretty much that's what I'll do today.
Sorry for that visual, folks, but that's the way it is. And Springer, you've got some advice for the holiday drinkers
out
there. Yes,
let me tell you something. As being a professional beer drinker,
yep.
And when the heat gets like this, folks, trust me, the beer is okay, but you must incorporate and rotate some electrolytes, be it Gatorade, Powerade, something.
Yep.
Because this heat out here, I love it.
Yeah.
But this heat out here is no joke.
There you go.
And if you're out there on the lake or whatever, you're drinking a beer or 12, trust me, you need to be watching what you're doing. And water's great, but get something with electrolytes in it, because that really it makes a big difference.
Maybe we should put you on pro staff for Anheuser-Busch.
And I'm just telling you,
you can recommend a new product. Electrolyte-enhanced Budweiser.
Okay, whatever. But I'm just saying, if you're going to be drinking beer in this temperature right here, first of all, be smart. Okay. Yeah. Second of all, know your limit.
Yeah.
And third of all, work those electrolytes in during the day.
And first of all, stay off the roads.
Bingo. And
off the water.
If you're driving.
I want to say, don't drink, don't drive. If you're going to have fun. But
same way with the boat.
Yeah.
Don't be drinking, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's already been a bad week as far as accidents around here this week. Several deaths. Just don't need to add to it.
No. And I feel for both the DNR officers and the Highway Patrol officers that have to deal with you.
It's going to be
with you morons out there.
And then you add the heat.
And the heat, yeah.
Beer already makes them crazy.
Yeah.
And then you add this heat.
It makes them more crazy.
They're out of their mind.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that,
sorry.
Happy Memorial Day. And we're going to get to our break and come back and talk about before hitting the water.
Right here on Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD. Tommy Springer, Phillip Gentry. Stay tuned.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Well, fortunately, here on Upstate Outdoors, our lips are not sealed. Springer's like, what?
No, I get it.
Classic pop.
I get it.
Okay, so Upstate Outdoors blog, Yoga Pants Diaries. Still got all my winter weight on, so I don't look as good as I would have hoped by this time.
Oh, man,
of year.
You're a walking violation of a fish's imagination, dude.
I still got a lot of child weight on my hips.
I mean, you know. Okay, yeah. If you say so.
Anyway.
Gotcha.
And listen, I can write everything I can think of to write, and that's not going to stop you from being a moron.
Bingo.
Okay? I can't legislate you, or I can't put in
wave
words.
Wave a magic wand.
I can't wave a magic wand and have you not be a moron.
Bingo.
If you're a moron, you're going to be a moron on the water.
Exactly.
Okay? But anyway, here's some suggestions if you're interested in not being a moron. The Memorial Day weekend signifies a number of different things to different people. At the top of the list is a day to remember all of our fallen soldiers and service members who gave their lives so we could enjoy our freedom in this great country.
Amen.
Yep, we hit that earlier in the show, and that still stands 15 minutes later. Memorial Day is also the unofficial kickoff to summer as well as the summer boating season. Boaters who regularly use their watercraft for fishing or early season water activities may have already been on the water, but for some upstate residents, this weekend might be the first time they've been on the water since last summer. Now, in order to have more time enjoying the water and less time or no time on the side of the road or tied up to the dock, here's some tips and suggestions before you hit the water this holiday weekend. Now, a little preventative marine maintenance goes a long way, and that starts with batteries, fuel systems, and trailer gear. Trust me, I live this.
I guarantee.
Yeah, I get it all the time. Not that I know it, but I hear it from a very reliable source. She's about 5'2". Anyway, before you put your boat on the ramp to see if it will start, try cranking the motor at home using a pair of water muffs or other water hose connections. A lot of times you can figure out what's wrong with it before you get out there blocking everybody else from putting their boat in, because there's going to be a lot of folks wanting to get their boat in the water.
Madhouse.
Fuel system cleaners may not be able to repair damage caused by gasoline storage over the winter, especially if that gasoline contains ethanol, but can help clean up the gas that's in there and help your carburetor run cleaner. So maybe you save it. Another overlooked maintenance item is battery power. Don't assume that a battery that was fully charged last summer will retain that charge. You could charge the battery on an inexpensive at-home charger, or if it's out of date or won't hold a charge, consider replacing your marine batteries. Now, if you've not done so this season, check and grease the bearings on your boat trailer, which requires more frequent service than utility trailers that are not submerged in the water.
Bingo.
I hate trailer bearings.
They can
be. If you've ever listened to the show, you know that.
They can be rough.
I hate trailer bearings. I don't understand in today's modern technology why we're still using technology for trailer bearings that was 100 years old.
I mean, I've seen them this time of the year real quick, Philip, pulling a boat toward Lake Hartwell on 85.
And they dry.
And the daggum, the bearing house, they're smoking.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like somebody just exhaled their vape, okay?
Yeah.
They're smoking.
Right there off the bottom.
I'd be all right.
Yeah. that's where.
I'm sorry.
Now, in addition to wheel bearings, make sure that you check your trailer lights and that they're in working order. Once you get to the water, courtesy at the boat ramp means having a boat that's ready to go, and that will start so you can move your vehicle and watercraft off the ramp in a timely manner. Like I said, I can only write this down. I can't stop you from being a moron.
Bingo.
Okay? But if you're going to be a moron, at least realize you're a moron. There's nothing worse than a moron who doesn't know they're a moron. So maybe we can convert some of those. Make sure you have at least two people who are familiar with backing the trailer into the water and moving the boat off the trailer and out to the courtesy dock in a timely manner. Load gear into the boat beforehand.
Bingo.
And have passengers waiting away from the launch area. How many times say, hey, run up here to the car and get my sunscreen?
Yep. Hundreds.
And everybody else is backed up around the corner.
I've seen fights at boat ramps.
Yeah. And
literally.
Like you said, in this heat.
Yeah.
It's going to get worse. Speaking of passengers, boating laws require that each vessel have an approved life preserver of appropriate size and rating for every occupant of that vessel. In addition, boats over 16 feet in length must carry an approved throwable device. We covered all that with First Sergeant Dawson last weekend. All vessels under 26 feet in length with an attached gas tank must also have a Coast Guard approved handheld portable fire extinguisher on board. Additionally, all boats less than 39 and a half feet must carry an efficient sound producing device such as a bell, whistle, or a horn. Now, each person, talking about agitators, them water gnats, personal watercraft, each person on a personal watercraft must wear a U.S. Coast Guard approved type 1, 2, 3, or 5 PFD. A personal watercraft may not be operated between sunset and sunrise and must be equipped with a self-circling or lanyard-type engine cutoff switch. Now, the cutoff or the kill switches are not required for use in South Carolina on other watercraft, but that's going to save your life, too.
Yes, it will.
They're strongly recommended to be used by the operator of the watercraft while the boat's under power, because in a lot of the, and you're going to have a lot of boat weight if you get thrown just out of your seat.
Right.
Okay, maybe thrown into the bottom of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody's at the wheel for a second or for a few seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you get thrown out of the water, that's going to cut that engine
exactly.
off.
Exactly.
Stop you. Finally, enjoying the holiday for many boaters means consuming alcohol. We've talked about that. Open containers of alcohol are permitted for all but the operator of the vessel. Unlike an automobile, you
Correct.
Have open container on a boat. Unless you're driving, and operating the vessel under the influence of drugs or alcohol is against the law. They will be out checking you. I promise you that.
Yes, sir.
Full listing of boating and safety requirements can be found on the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources website at dnr.sc.gov/boating/safety. Be safe. Enjoy the holidays. Happy boating. And don't be a moron.
Well put. Well said. Good points. Great points, Philip. Because can you imagine what it's like at Green Pond Landing right now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's a place to be.
Right, right.
And
it's just, you know, it's
I've seen some crazy stuff. Sometimes you just want to go watch. Just go look.
Almost, yeah. Like you just set up on the, you know, like set up on the hill and just, you know.
Next year.
In the shade.
Next year I'll be set up on the dock. Waiting, watching y'all. I'll be waving.
Yeah.
I'll be out there waving.
Yeah. And the thing that really throws up, I'm bashing them. The agitators.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they get that mindset that, you know, well, I don't have to do what all the boats do. I'm a jet ski. Okay. Those are the worst. Those are the worst. You know, first of all, probably haven't got a lot of experience with it. First of all, haven't got a lot of time on it.
Yeah.
And we're just going to go out here and run around with all these boats with all these, you know, different wakes. And especially younger people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're just not – the thinking process is not going
– Well, you know, if you kind of equate that in a lot of folks, the jet skiers should really be aware for their own safety.
Exactly.
I mean, if you kind of interpret that in like motorcycle riders.
Exactly.
You know, if you're a motorcycle rider on this weekend, man, you have got to watch out. You've got to watch out because nobody else is watching out for you.
No.
You know?
I would agree.
And you don't have enough, you know, that mass and protection and everything. When a little fender bender in an automobile is potentially
dangerous.
It's
one thing.
Yeah. If you're on a motorcycle.
Exactly.
Same thing goes if you're on a
personal life and death.
Watercraft.
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's go to our break. When we come back, we're going to ring up Chris Wood, president and CEO of Trout Unlimited, find out what's going on in the world of cold water trout fishing.
Right here on Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD, the Upstate's talk station. Tommy Springer, Philip Gentry, Upstate Outdoors. We're going to go catch some trout, some freshwater trout, right after this message.
Welcome back. Upstate Outdoors is on your radio, and we've got a special guest On the line with us now, we have got the president and CEO of Trout Unlimited, a very prestigious and a lot of folks up here do are big trout fishing fans. We've got a very active chapter, the Mountain Bridge Trout Unlimited chapter, and we've got Chris Wood, the president of Trout Unlimited, with us. Chris, welcome to Upstate Outdoors.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Great to have you on, Chris.
Now, every year, the Board of Trustees with Trout Unlimited, I guess you travel around to different places in the country to have your annual meeting. And this year, Trout Unlimited is going to come to our little old town of Greenville, South Carolina.
That's exactly right. It's to my knowledge, it's the first time in our 59 or so years that we've ever had the board come down to South Carolina. So this is a special treat for everybody.
Well, it seems like we've been with the Bassmaster Classic, kind of liked it here. So now the trout guys are like, hey, maybe they're on to something. But you guys are going to be going in a different direction when you get here, because we've got South Carolina has had an ongoing, very successful program with trying to protect and restore the Southern Appalachian brook trout. Tell us a little
That's
bit
right.
about your work with that program.
Yeah, that's right. So brook trout are just such especially Southern Appalachian brook trout. There's so many unique genetic variations in these remarkably beautiful fish. When you're south of Asheville, basically 80% of all of the remaining native brook trout habitat is found on national forest lands. And that's an agency that in the past 10, 15 years has lost about a third of its workforce. And so South Carolina, TU, and its 1,500, 2,000 members have been absolutely essential at working in partnership with the Forest Service to identify the stronghold refuges where you have the coldest, cleanest water and you have the healthiest streamside area that keeps those waters from getting too hot in the summer. And then identifying those and then really working to protect those. And then also identifying areas that might have, say, perched culverts. And that's a culvert is nothing more than the pipe that is put in the river, the pipe that you put the river through when it goes under a road. And a lot of times over time, what happens is the downstream side gets separated from the upstream side. And it's absolutely vital that fish are able to move upstream and downstream in response to things like drought or floods. And the South Carolina volunteers, we call them angler scientists because they've been out there helping the Forest Service to identify those high priority areas to protect and reconnect these remarkable little brook trout.
Now we're talking with Chris Wood, the president and CEO of Trout Unlimited. And Chris, interesting. I never thought about, fish being able to, or trout being able to move from one location to the other. Cause like you said, put the culverts in. And it's almost like you need some kind of a fish lift in order for them to get enough purchase to move upstream so that they can get back to their, to the rest of the river. What other challenges do we face in trying to restore and protect our native trout species?
Well, it's really not a big deal, frankly, to replace a culvert with a bridge. And that's what we're working with the Forest Service on. But, trout, particularly in the southeast, they have a tough road ahead, and they need all the help that we can give them. Increasingly we're seeing warmer temperatures, those high elevation brook trout populations, it's absolutely vital that we keep those intact. But the thing that's remarkable to me about South Carolina is that you actually have, and this is sort of like a little known secret, you have naturally reproducing wild trout in places like the Saluda River. And I'm reminded of a funny story of a few years ago. We had one of our South Carolina leaders who went out to Montana for our annual meeting in September. And, he went fishing on some of the famous Montana rivers and caught a bunch of 14, 15-inch fish. And that was all well and good. Then when he got home on the Saluda, he started catching 17, 18, 19-inch brown trout, which are obviously holdover fish. Not stocked that year. And so it's important in places like South Carolina that we do what we can to extend the cold water influence behind some of these FERC relicensed dams. Mm-hmm. What they do is they try to draw the water from the bottom of the dam in places like Table Rock Lake and Murray Lake. And that helps to extend the downstream influence of the cold water such that in some places, remarkably now, we actually have naturally reproducing fish in those big mainstem rivers like the Saluda.
That was a big discovery with the Department of Natural Resources because they were planting fish in the middle part of the state where you'd never even expect to find a trout. But they, like you said, they were getting the cold water from Lake Murray and they were doing consistent releases. And they were finding that, hey, those fish like that to the point that they were making a home and reproducing. And they were like, man, how do we protect that? And one of the first things that they did was, a no-take area. They just established that not too long ago. And, man, that's, you know, it's almost scary what you can do with entirely man-made items that really benefit wildlife like that.
Yeah, that's right. And you know why it works? It works because the South Carolina DNR is a great partner. And that legislation that you're talking about, so they – I'm not being critical, but rightly, they were dubious that, you know, when TU members started saying, hey, we're catching trout that are smaller than the ones that you stock. And these brown trout are not stocked this year. They're too big.
Yeah.
You know, and the DNR, to their credit, they did a 3-year study and they said, sure enough, yeah, you're right. There are some naturally reproducing fish in here. And one of the areas that we found as sort of a refuge that had good gravel, good cold water. Clearly, they were getting natural reproduction from reds, which are basically trout beds. There was, you know, the city of Columbia was, you know, they had made a decision to extend the public walkway along the river in an area that otherwise was pretty remote, where they had this natural reproduction happening. And to the DNR's credit, and to State Senator Katrina Sheely's credit, she, by the way, is a recipient of our prestigious South Carolina TU Palmetto Award. But they ended up, as you said, making that a catch-and-release area and protecting it. And it just goes to show you that when you can get state government working with private conservation groups, working with their elected representatives, great things can happen.
And another thing that South Carolina has done, and Trout Unlimited has been right there with them along the way, and, you know, all around the South, we have been mill towns for years and years and years, and a lot of those mills have kind of dried up and went away. But one of the holdovers from that have been dams, where they needed water, you know, for whatever reason. But now those dams serve no purpose whatsoever other than probably to collect some sediment here and there. And we're seeing the removal of a lot of these old dam projects. As a matter of fact, when the board comes down to visit here in Greenville in the next couple of weeks, you folks are going to go out and sort of visit a dam removal on Matthews Creek, which is in the Watson Cooper Heritage Preserve.
That's right. We're working with one of our great other conservation partners, Natural Land Trust, to remove that dam. We're gonna set it the state park that overlooks it and look down at the valley and see that project. I'm looking forward to it. I've never been there, but you're right. This is, and it's not unique to the Southeast. These, you know, basically what happened is these dams, they started up in New England and then they sort of marched their way south. I'm sorry, not these dams, but these mill towns.
Right.
And from New England, basically throughout the entire geographic range of brook trout in the Northeast, we have rivers that are just inundated by these unneeded, unused, obsolete dams that are nothing more than insurance liabilities for landowners,
right,
or for whoever owns them. And so it's just been great to see, and it's all happening all across the Northeast, that these dams that once helped to fuel our economy and once helped to provide jobs and really don't do anything now, they're coming out one at a time. And the chapters, the three chapters, the Mountain Bridge chapter, the Saluda chapter, the Chattooga chapter in South Carolina, are truly part of an army that are working in cooperation with their partners at the state and federal agencies to take these dams out. And as we continue to see these eras of intense floods and prolonged drought, it's absolutely vital that we reconnect these river systems, and dam removal is a big part of that.
Now, Chris, as far as when one of these dams is identified, and this one was maybe a little bit easier, maybe it wasn't because it was within a preserve, but when one of these dams is identified, what has to take place to get permission, so to speak, to take it out? Because I'm sure there are some folks that, it's been like that forever, nothing needs to be done. What's the first steps in having a dam removed?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, inertia is probably the most powerful force on Earth, right?
Yeah.
That dam's always been there. Let's not mess with it. But as I mentioned, many times what happens is that, you'll find these landowners realize that their insurance on the dam is expensive because these dams are falling apart. They're 100-year-old concrete structures that are just giving way. And there are people downstream that, they're in harm's way potentially. And so a lot of times landowners are coming to us and saying, hey, how do we remove this dam? And then what our great chapters do is they work with the professional staff to go through the permitting process, to work with the state, to make sure that we can safely and carefully remove these dams. And the thing is that most of these are really small dams. They're not big, complicated construction projects. They literally involve often just notching the dam and letting the power of water reopen the channel.
I was really surprised to learn that some of these dams, believe it or not, are made of sheet plywood and a little bit of rock structure behind them, and that's about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's good old American ingenuity. I mean, it's remarkable to think about what, our forebears were able to accomplish. But you're right. Sometimes they're made out of earth. Sometimes they're made out of plywood and rock stacked behind it, like you said. Sometimes they're made out of concrete. But if they're not serving a useful purpose and they're potentially dangerous, they need to go. And it's good to let these rivers breathe again. And it's good not just for trout. It's good for bass. It's good for the aquatic insects that all our fish that we love to catch depend on. Importantly, it's good for the communities as well, because a river that is able to access its floodplain is much less likely in a flood to burst the dam and then cause devastating downstream flooding. If these rivers can breathe and access their floodplains, it helps to diminish their energy and protect downstream communities from flooding. So there's benefits for fish and there's benefits for people too when you take out these unneeded dams.
Well, Chris, we're running a little bit short on time, but I got a good question came in on the text line. What else do you have to do? You can't just remove the dam because obviously you've got some areas that don't have any plant life or anything. What needs to be done for erosion control in those areas where the dams used to be?
Yeah, well, in terms of erosion control downstream of the dam removal?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just, you, like all things, you want to have a healthy riparian area to filter out the sediments and the nutrients that are coming from upstream. And we're very careful about this, to be clear. Before we would remove a dam, we would make sure that the removal is engineered in such a way that it wouldn't cause excessive erosion downstream. Mm-hmm. And importantly, that we wouldn't have like heavy metals that are stacked behind the dam that we're removing. So there's a lot of testing that's involved. There's a lot of permitting. This isn't something that's done overnight or willy-nilly.
Yeah. And we've had our share of contaminants, age-old contaminants like PCBs and all, and I know there's a lot that goes into that. Well, Chris, before we let you go, as far as some of our listeners out there want to get involved with Trout Unlimited, they want to help preserve these fish and the habitat that they live in, how can they get involved?
Man, don't walk. Run to your computer and go to tu.org, and we make it very easy to become a member. You'll be affiliated if you're in South Carolina with 1,550 of the finest people and greatest conservationists you'll ever work with.
Awesome.
Fantastic, Chris.
Chris Wood, Trout Unlimited, thanks for all the great work that you guys do, and keep it up. And you folks want to get, if you're not a TU member, you need to be one. If you're an old TU member, you need to renew, because these folks are doing a lot. If you love trout fishing, they got your interest at heart. So, Chris, thanks for being on the show with us. Great info, and we want to wish you a happy Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, thanks, Philip. Thanks, Tommy.
You
and
bet.
A great shout out to all the TU chapters that help wounded veterans to heal through fly fishing and time on the water. Happy Memorial Day.
Awesome. All right, Chris, tight lines.
There you
good,
go.
Good interview, Philip.
Awesome. Let's go to our break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some turkey regulations.
That ain't such good news.
No, I don't think so.
Right here in Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD. Be right back.
All right, well, I'm going to jump into this right quick and tell you why I don't particularly care for it. And if we got time, then I'll tell you why. There's some big changes in store for the 2020 turkey hunters in South Carolina beginning next spring. South Carolina once again have a split turkey season, and that's not the only change. For the past few seasons, South Carolina's turkey season ran from March 20th to May 5th. That was for the entire state. But beginning next year, Upstate game zone 1 and 2, we're going to go to opening on April 1st through May the 10th. That's nothing new for us. We did that forever beforehand. But the Midlands and lower part of the state, that's game zones 3 and 4, will run from March 22nd to April 30th. So we lose 2 weeks. They lose 2 days. South Carolina's turkey hunting season, I won't even get into that. Blah, blah, blah from Charles Ruth. The season limit remains 3 gobblers per hunter, but you can only kill 1 bird during the first 10 days of the season, okay? And also, a third major change is that turkey tags will no longer be free. Who didn't see that coming?
Boom, boom,
South Carolina boom. Residents will now pay $5 for their 3 turkey tags. Non-residents will receive 2 tags for $100, and the funds will go for whatever funds go
actually,
for.
Actually, they said it was for the to make up for the printing of the turkey tags is how they in that deal.
The new law was signed by Governor Henry McMaster on May 16th after the bill faced no opposition in either the House or the Senate. And I'm just going to call Bravo Sierra on this. Not for the folks in the lower part of the state, because they're always going to get
what they want.
What they want down there. But the folks who represent us up here, if you remember, we had Jay Cantrell, and he's like, well, we've discovered in the lower part of the state that turkeys, the hens don't nest until, what was it, April the 8th?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so rather than go by that letter of the law and making everybody start on April 10th or whatever, well, let's move it back 2 days down in the lower part of the state and April 1st up here. Now, I know DNR, they have a lot of give and take, and they always don't get what they want. And basically what happened was whatever senator wrote this bill or House of Representatives wrote this bill basically took the tenants that DNR was looking for. But nobody from the upstate who represents outdoorsmen, sportsmen, whatever, did anything. They were just like, okay, that's good. And the other thing, and I'm very disappointed in the Department of Natural Resources about the way that they basically shoved this through. There was very little, if any, public consensus on the matter.
Very true.
It was just like, well, hey, this is something that we need to do. And hey, if we can get Jay Cantrell or Charles Ruth back on the show, I will voice that to him. Say, look, I'm real disappointed. If this is the way the future of DNR is going, then we really need to look at who's coming in as the new director, you know, because Alvin Taylor's going out.
True.
And you folks are basically, I've always said I didn't think that the state legislature should be able to write the game and fish laws. South Carolina's one of the few states where that still happens. But, man, with stuff like this, you wonder if DNR is not going to be just as bad. I do. I still feel like the biologists have the health of the resource at heart.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I don't think they have the folks who are paying that $5, me and you and everybody else out there, you know, just heck with all y'all. We're going to get some more money from y'all, and we're going to do what we want to because it's for the health of the bird. And if that means you only get to kill one turkey or you only get to do whatever, then that's the way it's going to be. And oh, except for the folks down in the lower part of the state, because they always get what they want.
Yep.
So we're going to let them do that.
Well said, Philip.
So,
and you know another reason I think this was so shim-sham through? Let me tell you all they've been worried about the last 5 weeks up there in Columbia is making sure the daggum Carolina Panthers get tax exemption to come to South Carolina with a new this and a new that. Let's kiss their behinds. We ain't worried about this. That's irrelevant. We got to, you know.
Ought to be looking at why North Carolina no longer wants them.
Well, anyway, you know? That's what they've been tied up with for the last 4 or 5 weeks.
Well, like I said, I don't feel like our game and fish laws should be set by our General Assembly. I mean, it's antiquated, and you can have one legislator can railroad the whole thing, and it's just
like poo-poo.
That's my 2 cents on it. If you got a differing opinion, you can text us because we're going to break. We'll be right back.
Upstate Outdoors, 106.3 WORD. Tommy Springer and Philip Gentry bringing it to you from the heart and soul like he always does. Stay tuned. Top of the hour.